Rosenberg.
I'm Kanesh.
And we're Building Bridges, the Writers Guild of America, joined by SAG-AFTRA, on strike for their lives and livelihoods.
Let's hear from Fran Dresser, the president of SAG-AFTRA, announcing the Screen Actors' strike as they join with their sibling unions, the Writers Guild of America, 11,000 workers who have been on strike since May 2nd.
What happens here is important because what's happening to us is happening across all fields of labor by means of when employers make Wall Street and greed their priority and they forget about the essential contributors that make the machine run. We have a problem. We are experiencing that right at this moment. This is a very seminal hour for us. The gravity of this move is not lost on me or our negotiating committee or our board members who have voted unanimously to proceed with a strike. It's a very serious thing that impacts thousands, if not millions, of people all across this country and around the world. Not only members of this union, but people who work in other industries that service the people that work in this industry. And so it came with great sadness that we came to this crossroads, but we had no choice. We are the victims here. We are being victimized by a very greedy entity. I am shocked by the way the people that we have been in business with are treating us. I cannot believe it, how far apart we are on so many things, how they plead poverty, that they're losing money left and right when giving hundreds of millions of dollars to their CEOs. It is disgusting. Shame on them. They stand on the wrong side of history. We stand in solidarity, in unprecedented unity. Our union and our sister unions and the unions around the world are standing by us, as well as other labor unions. Because at some point, the jig is up. You cannot keep being dwindled and marginalized and disrespected and dishonored. The entire business model has been changed by streaming, digital, AI. This is a moment of history that is a moment of truth. If we don't stand tall right now, we are all going to be in trouble. We are all going to be in jeopardy of being replaced by machines and big business. Who cares more about Wall Street than you and your family? Most of Americans don't have more than $500 in an emergency. This is a very big deal, and it weighed heavy on us. But at some point, you have to say, no, we're not going to take this anymore. You people are crazy. Why are you doing this? Privately, they all say, we're the center of the wheel. Everybody else tinkers around our artistry. But actions speak louder than words. And there was nothing there. It was insulting. So we came together in strength and solidarity and unity with the largest strike authorization vote in our union's history. And we made the hard decision that we tell you as we stand before you today, it's really serious and it's going to impact every single person that is in labor. We are fortunate enough to be in a country right now that happens to be labor friendly. And yet, we were facing opposition that was so labor unfriendly, so tone deaf to what we are saying. You cannot change the business model as much as it has changed and not expect the contract to change too. We're not going to keep doing incremental changes on a contract that no longer honors what is happening right now with this business model that was foisted upon us. What are we doing? Moving around furniture on the Titanic? It's crazy. So the jig is up, AMPTP. We stand tall. You have to wake up and smell the coffee. We are labor and we stand tall and we demand respect and to be honored for our contribution. You share the wealth because you cannot exist without us. Thank you.
You were listening to President of SAG-AFTRA, Fran Drescher. In 2002, there was the movie Simone. And this was pointed out recently in a New York Times column, which I thought was very interesting, by writer Maureen Dowd, and I recalled seeing it. So the movie Simone, Pacino plays a director whose star is played by Winona Ryder. And she walks out on him, complaining about her trailer not being sophisticated and grand enough for her. And Pacino's character is really upset. So he decides to do, in his disgust, create an obedient actress. He makes a computer-generated actress to replace his temperamental one. Simone is a perfect-looking, oh yes, a blonde, named after the computer program that crafted her, Simulation 1. Simone is so successful, lavished with Oscars, adored by fans, that she overshadows her director, who becomes so jealous that he decides to get rid of her with a computer virus. But he made her so realistic, he's charged with murder. Ah, be careful what you wish for, Hollywood studios, as you mess with the primal force, AI.
Hamilton Nolan is a labor writer for In These Times. He has spent the last decade writing about labor and politics for Gawker, Splinter, The Guardian, and elsewhere. Much of his work is on Substack. Well, Hamilton, should Hollywood be careful about what it wishes for? Can we, the writers and actors, stop AI from cannibalizing our jobs?
And thanks for joining us, Hamilton Nolan.
The answer is yes, we can, and the time is now to do it. And the strikes that are happening in Hollywood, first the WGA and now SAG, are essentially the first attempt by working people to really build protections for all of us surrounding the use of AI. An interesting thing about AI is that it is coming on so fast that you see changes at a speed and at a scale that we haven't seen with technologies before. And the urgency that you're seeing with these strikes is partly because we all know that if we don't build some protections around AI right now, by the time the next contract rolls around, it might be too late for all of us.
Now, how do we begin to, or how do the unions, the Screenwriters Guild, SAG-AFTRA, begin to write in contractual clauses that would cause them absolutely losing their livelihoods entirely?
It's a question that every union is scrambling to figure out right now. In a perfect world, the government would regulate AI properly, and the rollout of AI into society at large would be a very well thought out and well planned thing, but unfortunately, that's not the world that we live in, and it's actually put unions in the position of being really the leaders on this issue because the government, there's no way that the U.S. government is going to act quickly enough to regulate AI. So really, effectively, where the regulations are going to be is in union contracts. How is that done? I think the fundamental principle that the writers and the actors are trying to build around is that creative work comes from the mind of a human. Those of us in journalism and in the media are dealing with the exact same issues, and I think are trying to put forward the same principle that, you know, AI is a technology, it's a tool, it can help us do things, but AI cannot be the source of creative works. I mean, ultimately, there has to be a human mind creating these things. No working person, particularly if you're an actor, wants your likeness to be stolen by AI in perpetuity. If you're a writer, you don't want your work to be read by computers and then spit back out forever and ever in rewrites of what you've done. So these AIs were trained on the product of human minds, and we have to use them in a way that benefits humans. I think that's the fundamental point.
Can you give us more details, more examples of how AI is being used today and where it immediately is going, much less in 6 months or a year, which is obviously going to be worse?
Look, I'm a journalist. I'm a member of the Writers Guild East, which represents thousands of journalists as well as screenwriters. And we've seen already in journalism, a number of different publications have started publishing AI-written content directly on their websites as if it was written by a human journalist. And it's extremely alarming. And journalists who work at all of these publications are reasonably freaked out by this, because not only does AI make a lot of errors and get things wrong, but AI is not accountable in the way that a human journalist is. So it's not really possible to have AI-written content and pretend that you are engaging in ethical journalism, because there can never be any accountability when the journalism comes from a computer that you can't see into, that's essentially a black box. We're dealing with that in our contracts on the journalism side of the union. The screenwriters are trying to get out ahead of the day when studios might try to just have AI write scripts, to jettison their human screenwriters and just have AI spit out 100 scripts for a low price. SAG-AFTRA and the actors are trying to get out ahead of the time when actors are hired for one day of work and have their likenesses and images cloned and can then be replicated indefinitely by AI in background scenes, which is actually something that the AMPTP was asking for in their proposals. So we're in early times for AI and where it's going to go, but it's not hard to see that all of the employers in all these fields look at AI as a way to get out from under labor costs and do not have very much concern at all about whether or not the stuff that AI is making is good or ethical or just or any of that.
And I was wondering if you have any sense of the specificity of the demands that are being put forward by the screenwriters. The screen actors are kind of joining with the screenwriters who have been out since May 2nd. So do you have a sense of how they're trying to sculpt the nature of the demands? Is it saying, well, we'll just use these things for some research, but we won't use them for any kind of creative products or so on?
Yeah. Essentially, the writers are trying to say in their contract, look, creative works must be made by human beings. That is the essence of what is being asked for in the contract, to try to avoid what I just talked about, which is companies simply using AI to replace their creative workers. That's the gist of it. It is to prevent AI from being used to simply replace humans and instead to keep AI as another tool that can supplement the work of humans. I think you're absolutely right about the fact that the threat of AI is the automation threat that a century ago hit blue-collar workers and that they've been dealing with for many years and is now coming for all these white-collar professions. It's not hard to imagine all the professions that could potentially see a lot of their current types of work wiped out by AI, architects, lawyers, these people who all thought they were immune from these kind of things. And so I think an interesting thing about the strikes and the galvanizing labor moment that we're in is that you see all these not just white-collar professionals, but creative professionals coming out and understanding that we're all in the same boat. Hopefully this will contribute to solidarity throughout the economy, because it has posed the fact that was always true, that was there's two sides, labor and capital, and labor has to stick together.
Nolan, given your work, you are really par excellence, a labor analyst, writer, journalist. Is it your sense now that the unions, the screenwriters, the screen actors, understand that they are on the cutting edge, perhaps, of protection for the broader union movement, other unions, that it's really almost on them to, if they do not wind up with a fair and equitable contract that disciplines artificial intelligence, that halts it for doing quote-unquote creative work, that we are in deep trouble. I mean, do you think that they understand it, or do you think that understood as the incredible importance of the strike, which is now the 11,000 people that have been out, which is now joined by the Screen Actors Guild?
I do think they understand it. They understand what a heavy burden it is. I mean, I've sat in a number of meetings where these very things have been discussed inside the Writers Guild, across the media unions. The White House is having meetings with all types of unions about AI right now. Every union, not just the Hollywood unions, not just the white-collar unions, not just the creative unions, all those unions are really waking up to the importance of this issue. Now, the fact that this burden is being thrust on the shoulders of unions doesn't necessarily mean that unions are the most qualified people to solve it. Hopefully, we'll be able to whip up a society-wide effort to come up with the best standards for this, because there's no guarantee that the negotiating team at SAG-AFTRA are experts in AI. I mean, this is a war of necessity. And so it's a little nerve-wracking, but I do think that the unions understand the importance of what's going on.
And what do you believe the response of the wider public is to all of this?
From what I've seen, the response has been incredibly supportive. I've been out on the picket line a bunch of days with the writers out of New York, and we see the responses they get in LA as well. And from the very beginning of the writer's strike, it was incredible to see the solidarity that they were getting from other unions, because they've been able to shut down essentially all production of those shows only because they got solidarity from the workers who are in IATSE and the Teamsters who deliver the goods. All of those people have been, for the most part, respecting the writer's picket line. And when you add in SAG-AFTRA to it, I think it's going to supercharge it, especially in how visible it is in the wider society, because who are the members of SAG-AFTRA? I mean, they are the celebrities. They are the actors. They are people who are charismatic for a living, which is not something you can necessarily say about the writers. I think publicly, the support is only going to grow. Definitely a David and Goliath issue. The people running the studios on the other side of the table are making hundreds of millions of dollars. And meanwhile, the majority of the members in SAG-AFTRA can't make $26,000 a year to qualify for health care. From everything that I've seen on the picket line and in the way that this is being covered in the media, I'm pretty confident that the public is on our side.
This is all happening. There's a dramatically different economic model that's shaped by transformative technologies like AI, which is a key issue in the strike. But I'm interested in the other issues as well. There's the residuals from streaming media. The writers claim that the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers' share of such residuals cut the writers' average incomes and completely devalue their economic position. Can you talk about some of the other issues, such as the residuals that are out there with the picket signs being held up, as I saw today, actually with Kevin Bacon? Yeah, he was outside of Paramount picketing and made a wonderful and impassioned plea about it's the strike isn't about his salary. The strike is about the fact that the overwhelming majority are middle to lower middle class to really hardcore working class and are making very, very little money. So can you talk about some of those other issues, such as the residuals from streaming media and what's happened to the industry?
The big picture answer is that in these industries, both for writers and for actors in Hollywood, over decades and decades, these contracts were built up to get those people paid from an industry that was based on television and films and theaters. Residual payments, which are payments that people get when stuff that they make is shown on TV, for many, many years, those were kind of the backbone of a lot of people's earnings. When technology changed and the streaming companies like Netflix came out and got bigger and bigger and started to take bigger and bigger pieces of the industry, those contracts that had been made to deal with TV and film no longer were really relevant. And, you know, today they don't really capture the essence of where people are actually consuming all this content, you know, because streaming has gotten to be such a big part of our entertainment landscape that we have reached the point when the streaming companies are actually, particularly in the case of companies like Apple and Amazon, you know, hugely bigger and more powerful than the traditional Hollywood companies. And so what's really going on that front is the unions are trying to write a contract that's reflective of the reality of how the business is today. And the business today is a streaming-based business. And you can't have contracts that are based on the idea that everyone is going to make a living off of cable TV broadcasts when two-thirds or three-quarters of the stuff is going to be seen on streaming instead. You have to be able to write rules that reflect where people are seeing stuff and also where companies are making their money. You know, when Netflix first came out and first started to get big, there was a big effort by the Hollywood AMPTP to act like it wasn't going to be a big deal and that it shouldn't be a big contract issue and let's wait and see how it goes. And that's one of the things that prompted the last writer's strike. Again, you're seeing that the employer is always going to downplay the importance of new technologies. And part of this process is just these workers having to go on strike to keep up with where the industry is going.
Well, you know, one of the things is there's a piece recently by John Cusack. He was infuriated, the colossal greed. He talked about Cameron Crowe's classic 1989 teen romance about a mediocre high school student who falls for the class valedictorian after their graduation. And according to Cusack, he received no percentage of the film's box office gross and then was told by the studio that the film lost $44 million. Well, the actor says he remains very dubious, but the studios are claiming poverty. They're claiming, you know, on that film, they lost $44 million. Oh, what is a poor executive to do against a worker who may be eligible? And yes, there are many of the people in the Writers Guild who actually are eligible for SNAP benefits. But is it a total a fraud? Are the studios really losing money? And is that what the issue is? And should we give a damn if they were compared to what we believe in, which is workers' rights, and it's the workers who create the wealth?
That in particular is a pretty interesting issue because it's not really the central issue that they're striking on. But once these strikes got going, people started telling these stories left and right, like the one you just told about these movies that everybody would have thought had made hundreds of millions of dollars. But suddenly, according to the counting from the studios, they lost $100 million or maybe $1. You know, I've seen people calling for congressional investigations into Hollywood accounting now. And it would be a little funny if this strike sparked up something like that.
Yeah, we'll turn it over to one of the Republican committees right alongside Hunter Biden. They'll do a great job. The other strategic issues that render this strike, Nolan, so important, and it's been a while now, it's since May 2nd that our comrade writers have been on the picket lines, and the vast majority, they are getting killed on what they make, and the writers there have kind of stockpiled a lot of the streaming content, which has not made it easier for them to put the pressure on towards the resolution of the strike.
It's true, you know, Netflix in particular, which has a lot of international studios and a lot of international locations and a lot of international connections, is obviously more robust against the strike because they can shift some production overseas. We'll say that the Writers Guild has gotten really great solidarity from the Writers Guilds of different nations in Europe and elsewhere. So that has been helpful. But it's true that these sort of global corporations are a little bit harder to crack. And it's going to take a little longer for that pipeline of content that they have to dry up. But particularly with the actors going on strike, you know, people have already been saying that Labor Day is when Hollywood is going to kind of hit the point when their big movie release schedule is going to be messed up if the strike is still going on. So that's not too much more than a month away. And that does put the pressure on the AMPTP.
What are some of the other strategic issues relevant to this strike that we should be concerned about and, of course, join our siblings on the picket lines?
This strike, not only the writer's strike, but the actor's strike, are for the same issues that everyone deals with, which is that the biggest piece of the proceeds that we create are being sucked off by a small number of people at the top, executives and the investment class in Wall Street. I think people should not look at these strikes and say, oh, these are super specific Hollywood issues that don't have anything to do with me. You know, the only thing that really distinguishes Hollywood is that it's a highly unionized industry. So it is almost top to bottom unionized and is full of really strong unions that have the capability to shut down production and strike. But the issues themselves are not that unique. It is an elite sucking off a huge and unfair share of the proceeds. And what the unions are trying to do is kind of wrench that stream back a little more toward normalcy. Hopefully, you know, I hope that people all over the place, no matter what field they work in, will look at this and say, this is essentially the same stuff that we're all facing, but here's what can happen with the power of unions. And so if we can get the kind of union density in service industries and retail industries and industrial industries that we have in Hollywood, a lot of things about America could be different.
It's about the working class versus the robber barons. It's the working class versus the bosses. It's the working class versus the moguls.
But I think one of the long-term tests of what's happening now is going to be whether this moment in labor and all of these strikes and all of this sentiment that we have can lead to more organizing, the spread of unions in America, and a reversal of the decline of union density, which has been going on since the middle of last century, because that is actually going to be the test of whether this sentiment can be sustained and nurtured and grown and used to change the country, or whether it's just going to be a flash in the pan. Just as a final thought, this is going to be a test of whether human creativity can hold the line against machines. And for everyone who cares about humanity, go out and join the picket line, and also hopefully get inspired by everything that's happening now and organize your own workplace and become part of the labor movement, because the labor movement, for better or worse, is the best tool that we have to change this country.
He said, thank you. And to all of our listeners, hey, what do we say? We say educate, agitate, and organize to empower we, the people, for another world is possible if we have the tools to and choose to make it so. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Karen Nash.
And we're Building Bridges.